So, I work in the subway, right? It's not like your typical 9-to-5. It's more of a whenever the trains are rolling kind of shift. The city never sleeps, they say, and neither do the subways. My spot is the maintenance crew down in the tunnels of Boston's oldest lines, the kind where the bricks could probably tell you some crazy stories from the 1900s. I never put much stock in spooky tales. I mean, working underground, you hear all sorts of things: rats scuttling, old pipes groaning, the occasional echo of someone's laughter twisting down a tunnel. But this one night, the sounds were very different than normal. I was down near the Park Street station, the part where the green and red lines cross paths, right? There's this bit of tunnel down there that not many want to visit, even the most seasoned of us. We got this call over the radio about some power fluctuations, lights flickering on and off, that sort of nuisance. So, it's my turn to check it out. I grab my flashlight and toolkit. It's just past midnight, way past the buzz of commuters, just the last of the night trains passing through. The tunnel's damp that day, more than usual. The air feels heavy, like before a storm when the sky's about to crack open. High humidity, everyone kept saying. The lights are doing that thing where they dim and then flare bright enough to make you think they'll pop. I'm walking along the track, careful-like, because the third rail's a mean bite if you touch it. I reach the spot where the lights are having a dance party, and I get to work. I'm checking the cables, the connectors, when suddenly the lights go out completely, not flickering and no warning. They just go out, pitch black, can't see my own hands in front of my face, kind of dark. The backup lights are supposed to kick in when this happens, but they don't. It's just me in the dark and the silence. Then I hear it, not a rat, not the trains. It's a growl, low and mean, a sound that gets right under your skin like you've been cornered by a coyote or something. I flick on my headlamp and I swear it's flickering like it's scared too, but it's probably just my head bobbing around. The beam cuts through the dark, and there, in the shadows, are these eyes. Not tiny little rat eyes, not human eyes either. They're red, glowing like the end of a cigarette in a pitch-black room, and they're watching me. My heart's racing, and I know I should get the heck out of there, but my legs have other plans, like they're cement attached to the ground. And just my luck, the growl gets louder, which to me means closer. So now I've got a job to do. I need to save myself. I finally get my legs to work, and I start backing up, slow, not taking my eyes off those red dots. I'm thinking this is it. Some subway beast is going to be the end of me. No more beers after shift. No more complaining about the socks with the guys. No more anything that's bad or negative. I would have sworn it all off in that moment. So, there I am, thinking about all the things I won't get to do anymore. But I'm not ready to be just a memory of a guy who worked in the subway. Not yet. I'm not a superstitious guy either, but right then, I'm praying to every saint I can think of. That's when the train's distant rumble starts up. It's not due to be here yet. I was supposed to still have some time on a free track, but here it is coming down the line. The sound gets louder. The rails start to move and squeak with the vibration. And I'm thinking, okay, this is my chance. The light, the noise, and the size of the train should scare off anything, right? Animals, they don't like lights and noise. So, I'm standing there waiting and hoping this will all be over. The train rounds the corner, headlight cutting through the dark, and for a second, I'm relieved. Except, the eyes, they don't budge one bit. They're unblinking, unfazed. And that's when I realize this thing isn't afraid at all. The train's barreling down, and I'm caught in the middle of the tracks, caught between a train and those eyes. At the last possible second, I jump out of the way, pressing myself against the tunnel wall. The train roars past, a blur of motion and noise. I'm pressed so tight against the wall, I can feel every brick digging into my back from the change in pressure as it passes. The wind from the train's passing is like a slap, snapping me back to reality. When the last car passes, the eyes are gone. The tunnel's just a tunnel again. The air's just damp, not heavy, and I'm just a guy who should have been hit by a train but wasn't. I radio in to say the power's back on because, strangely, the glitch fixed itself. That's when I notice it. The silence isn't right. It's too silent. No rats, no dripping water, no distant echo of life above. I shake it off, pick up my tools, and I start walking back. I'm looking over my shoulder every 2 seconds, can't help it. When I finally get out of there, climbing up into the night air, I feel like I can breathe again, but it's like that tunnel changed something in me. It's like I'm a kid again who is now afraid of the dark. I can't shake the feeling of those eyes, or the sound of that growl that wasn't a growl. I pass it off and just tell myself it's from too much coffee, but deep down, I know it wasn't anything like that. So, there it is, the start of something I can't explain, something that makes me question all the logical, rational parts of my brain. I keep it to myself, but every time I clock in, I wonder if tonight's the night I'll hear that growl again, see those red eyes watching me again. And I can't help but wonder, what was it waiting for? What would have happened if that train wasn't early? I always thought legends were just that, tall tales from days when the world was still a mystery. But what I saw that evening made me reconsider everything. I'm the type that if you told me this story, I'd probably laugh it off. But here I am, telling it to you, and I swear every word is true. I was out in the woods of Bray Road, near Elkhorn in Wisconsin. It's a spot known for strange sightings, but I was there for the quiet, not the cryptids. I'm a wildlife photographer, and that night, I hoped to catch some shots of nocturnal creatures. The full moon was bright, casting long shadows between the trees, which made the woods seem alive, even if I was the only person for miles. The air was crisp, and the usual sounds of the forest filled the night. I had set up near a clearing. The moonlight gave everything a silvery hue that evening, but as soon as I set everything up, that's when it all got weird. The forest went silent. If you spend enough time in the woods, you know that's a bad sign. It's like every creature is watching for a predator and waiting for something bad to happen. I looked through my camera, scanning the clearing, when I saw it. At first, I thought it was a large dog, but as it stepped into the moonlight, I realized it was standing on two legs. This was no dog. It was massive, at least 7 feet tall, with fur as dark as the shadows it stepped out of. Its ears were pointed, and its snout was long and pronounced. I froze, my heart pounding so loud, I thought it might scare the creature off. But it didn't. It just stood there sniffing the air. Its eyes glowed like laser beams. I thought for sure it didn't realize I was there, but eventually it looked right at me. And the knowledge that I couldn't hide from it was terrifying to me. I couldn't move, couldn't even think about running. It's like my brain had checked out, leaving my body behind to face whatever was going to happen. The creature started moving, slowly, deliberately, circling the clearing. I followed it with my camera, the shutter clicking softly. It stopped and tilted its head, like it was listening for something. Minutes passed, but time didn't make sense anymore. It felt like we were the only two beings in the world. Then, it did something that chilled me to the bone. It started to speak. I don't mean it growled or howled. It spoke. The words were garbled, like it was learning to use its throat in a new way. But it was definitely trying to form words. I couldn't understand what it was saying, and honestly, I didn't want to. I just wanted this nightmare to end. The creature took a step toward me, its massive frame moving effortlessly. It was surreal, watching something so powerful and so terrifying move with such grace. It wasn't just the size or the fact that it only used two legs, but the sheer presence of it. This thing commanded the night. I wanted to scream to do something, but my body wouldn't cooperate. I was a statue, a man paralyzed by the incomprehensible. It moved closer, and I could see more details. The fur was thick and matted in places, like it had lived its whole life outdoors, untamed, unafraid. The eyes, though, they were intelligent, deep, and a color I can't even begin to describe. They weren't the yellow of animal eyes caught in the light. They were something else entirely, like an amber hue that I've never seen before. It was then that the creature cocked its head, almost curiously. The mouth moved, and a low, rumbling sound came out. It wasn't a growl, but something between a grunt and a word. My brain finally kick-started my survival instincts, and I remembered the camera hanging around my neck. Instinctively, I lifted it, not to protect myself, but to document this, to have evidence of what I was seeing. My finger trembled on the shutter button, but I managed to snap a few photos, the sound impossibly loud in the silence between us. The dog man, because what else could it be, seemed to react to the camera. It didn't lunge or snarl, but it stood up straighter, its posture almost one of annoyance. As if I had breached some unspoken rule of engagement, it was observing me, and now I had observed it back, an exchange that felt profoundly significant. I mustered the courage to take a step back, expecting it to charge, but it didn't. It just watched me, and then, to my utter disbelief, it mirrored my action, stepping back as well. Was it mimicking me? Trying to communicate? I couldn't understand. And then, the dogman moved away, its stride silent despite its size. It glanced back once, a look that I interpreted as a final acknowledgement, and then it was gone, melting into the darkness of the woods, as if it had never been there at all. I was alone again, the night sounds slowly returning. Crickets chirped, an owl hooted in the distance, and I was left to question the fabric of my reality. My heart still raced, my breath came in gasps, but my feet finally obeyed my commands. I packed up my things mechanically, leaving nothing behind but footprints. I reached my truck and didn't dare to stop until I was miles away, the moonlight fading behind me as I drove into the early morning haze. The photos, those cursed photos, were all I had left of the encounter. They were proof, but they were also a burden. Who would believe them? That night stays with me, etched into my memory with vivid clarity. I still go out into the woods, camera in hand, but now there's a part of me that listens for the silence. The Dogman of Bray Road is real. I've seen it, and it has seen me. And the world feels like a stranger place because of it. You know how some people have those defining moments? The kind they can pinpoint in a story that goes, and that's when everything changed. Well, I never figured I'd have one of those, but I did. I'm just a regular guy, born and raised in a small town where everybody knows everybody. And if you don't wave back, you're probably having a bad day. I've been working at the manufacturing plant just outside of town since I got out of high school, 20 years this May, and I've been on the third shift the better part of the last 10. It's one of those massive places that looks like a giant gray box dropped in the middle of nowhere. I stick to myself there, always have. I like being alone. I'm not much for the bar scene or the church socials. Give me a quiet night and a clear sky. That's more my speed. My mom used to say I got my dad's temperament, quiet and a bit of a loner. He was a truck driver, gone most weeks, so it was mostly just me and mom. She passed a couple of years back from cancer. It was rough, especially since Dad was long out of the picture. I guess that's why I took to the night shift. Less people, less noise, just me and the machine since this is a mostly automated plant. I never minded the solitude. There's a rhythm to the night that you start to feel in your bones after a while. It becomes a part of you, and I prefer it that way. It's quiet when you step out for a smoke, with no one trying to make small talk. Just the distant sound of the highway, with the occasional 18-wheeler passing through. It's not exciting, but it's a life. And it was enough for me, until that night. The night was like any other to begin with. The hum of the factory was a steady drone in the background. I like to take my breaks at the same time, give or take. This one was at 2:30 a.m. There was a spot out back, a little nook between a couple of storage units, where I could see the stars pretty clear. I'm no astronomer, but over the years, I've gotten pretty good at picking out constellations. I remember feeling off that night before I even saw it, like I was dizzy or something, like gravity or the Earth was leaning the wrong way. I zipped up my jacket, shoved my hands in my pockets, and walked my usual route along the perimeter finishing up my cigarette. That's when I saw it. It's funny how your brain tries to make sense of things, tries to fit them into boxes it understands. But this didn't fit in any box I knew. It was just there, hanging above the tree line, not making a sound. No lights, No engines, no nothing. Just a shape against the stars. I stood there, my mind racing to catch up with my eyes, wondering if anyone else in town was looking up and seeing what I was seeing. But I knew they probably weren't because it was the middle of the night. So I figured it was just me and this thing, whatever it was. And this is where I'll let you know that I have a pretty strict system. Everything in my life is measured and orderly. I have a place for everything, and everything is always in its place. I believe that's how you keep the chaos at bay, how you make sure things don't fall apart. So when I saw it there, this anomaly in my sky, it wasn't just a curiosity. It was a crack in the very foundation of my world. It bothered me like you wouldn't believe. I'd like to tell you I ran inside, grabbed a camera, or tried to call someone. But the truth is, I just stood there, my feet rooted to the spot. Officially, my break was over. I knew that. The line would be running and the caps wouldn't be checked. But none of that seemed to matter right then. This shape, it was like a shadow, but not, and it moved with purpose. It wasn't being tossed around by the wind or following a current. It was like it was alive in its own right. It came closer, and I could see it wasn't just one solid mass. It was made up of parts, segments, like a silent, undulating puzzle of darkness. There was no sound, no fanfare, no dramatics. The world was as quiet as it ever was, and now it was around 3 a.m. on a Wednesday night, except for this silent visitor. It felt like it was observing me, deciding what I was, what my little life was all about in the grand scheme of things. I thought about every story I'd ever heard, every late-night show with callers talking about lights in the sky, and lost time. I chuckled at them, the same way I chuckled at horoscopes and palm readings. But there I was, a living cliche, a guy working at a factory who'd tell a tale no one would believe. It hung there, and I felt something. Not fear, not really. It was more like recognition. It's hard to explain. It's like when you're a kid, and you're sure there's a monster in the closet. But when you finally get up the nerve to look, you find an old baseball glove instead. Except the glove knows your name, and you know it's not just a glove. Weird, I know. Then, as suddenly as it appeared, it started to move away. It didn't zip off at the speed of light or anything. It just drifted slow and steady until it was gone, like mist on a river at dawn. Just gone. And the stars were back, and the sky was just the normal old sky. I checked my watch. It was hard to see in the dark, but I could make out the hands. I hadn't lost time, hadn't been zapped to another dimension, or whatever happens in those stories. It was just later, and I was just there the same as always. Except now I had overstayed my break. I went back inside, my mind a riot of thoughts. The line was running, the caps were fine. The world was turning, and the night shift was just the night shift. I finished my shift. The machines didn't care about my weird encounter. Why should they? They were machines. Eventually, the sun started to creep up, and just as I always did, I clocked out, got in my Ford, and drove the same road home, planning to arrive home at the same time I always did. I didn't look up, though. Not that morning. I wasn't ready to see the sky just yet. I still needed to think about it all first. I just kept my eyes on the road, my hands steady on the wheel, the familiarity of the route home comforting me after the night's strangeness. In the rearview mirror, I caught a bit of a light and wondered how I would deal with this going forward. Because now, despite my desire for the mundane and the predictable, my world had expanded. There was a before, and now there was an after, and I was somewhere in the middle just driving home. So, I want to tell you about that time something wild happened to me. Alright, let me take you back to this trailer park I call home, tucked away in the Northern California woods, not far from the Klamath River. Life here is simple, the kind of place where we're all in the same boat, and a neighbor's nod is as good as a handshake. It was a Tuesday when it all went down. Tuesdays are special around here, because that's when the steak truck rolls through, hawking meat that didn't sell over the weekend. I was between gigs at the time, so it was just me spending lots of time in my trailer, and a pile of bikes I'd fix up and sell. It's quiet work, and I liked it that way. That evening, as the light was getting all golden and lazy, I was outside wrestling with a bike chain when this thumping noise started up. I'm telling you, it was weird, like someone was tossing around heavy logs out in the woods. I wiped off my forehead and stared hard into the trees, but the dusk made it tough to see. Thinking it was probably a deer or something, I didn't sweat it. They come down from the hills all the time, with the bucks sometimes rubbing their antlers on the trees. But this noise was different, heavier, more deliberate. My curiosity kicked in, and I found myself walking towards the edge of the park. It was cooler there. The air smelled like wet earth and pine needles because there was less light over there. I moved into the trees, and that's when I saw something. It was huge and dark, standing upright like a man, but covered in fur. It was digging through a bear-proof trash can like it was looking for a lost set of keys. I think I may have gone into shock at the sight of it. I've heard folks talk about Bigfoot, but come on. You never figure you'll actually see one, like you never really think they're real. It looked over at me, and I swear it was like sending a warning to the person who's caught you eavesdropping. It grumbled, a deep sound that you feel in your body, and I just stood there, like it was completely in charge. This thing, this Sasquatch, it wasn't aggressive, just seemed curious. It picked up the trash can, easy as if it was a cardboard box, and started off into the trees with it. And for reasons I still can't fathom, I followed it. The deeper into the woods I got, the more alert I became. Every snapped twig or rustle in the bushes felt like more than it really was. The creature stayed ahead of me, never too close, but never out of sight for long. I was able to easily follow it as it was moving towards the hills. Time got weird in those woods, like it totally stopped and completely sped up at the same time. I kept tracking the creature until I reached a clearing at the foot of a cliff that stretched up into the sky. It was there I found a path of broken branches and that trash can, now all bent out of shape and emptied of its contents. For a brief moment, I wondered who would be in charge of trekking out here to retrieve it. I stood in the clearing for a while, just taking it all in. The cliff loomed above me, and I figured that the creature was already at the top, which was too daunting of a climb for me. I was about to turn back when I heard it again, that same thumping sound, but closer this time, and so I second-guessed my thoughts on the creature's location. It's funny how your mind tries to make sense of things, how it tries to comfort you with logic when your gut knows better. I told myself it was just another animal making that sound, which would mean my life wasn't in danger. Maybe something had come over to finish off whatever scraps had been left from the trash can. But deep down, I knew what it really was. Then, there it was. The Sasquatch stepped out from between two pines, its massive form clear in the failing light. It was now a certainty that it was not at the top of the hill. It stopped when it saw me, and we stood there looking at each other across the clearing. I don't know why, but suddenly I wasn't scared. We just watched each other for a while. It didn't come any closer, and I sure as heck didn't move. I got the sense it was as fascinated by me as I was by it. After a long moment, it turned and walked away, disappearing into the woods with easy strides that covered ground fast. I didn't follow it this time. Instead, I hiked my way back to my trailer, my head so full of questions that I could barely remember my way back. But I eventually made it. The next day, I started asking around quietly, trying to find out if anyone else had ever seen something strange. One neighbor told me to ask Jerry, who lived a few trailers down and had seen more winters than most of us. I was headed over to his place when he intercepted me halfway there and pulled me aside. He spoke in a hush and told me he'd seen it too. Years ago when the park was just a few homes, and the trees came right up to our doors. He described it just like I would have, a giant shadow that walked like a man. Jerry never mentioned it to anyone, said he didn't want to stir up trouble or seem like he'd lost his grip on reality. But he was willing to talk to me because he could tell from the whispers in the neighborhood that I'd seen the exact same thing. Hearing Jerry's story made me feel less alone, less like I was losing my mind. I kept to myself after that. Not that that was anything new, and I didn't go looking for the creature again. But sometimes, late at night, I'd hear that thumping, and I'd actually smile. knowing that I had a secret, and for some reason I really liked that Jerry and I shared that secret together. I've been a park ranger here at Yellowstone for the better part of a decade. Yellowstone, with its geysers and wildlife, has basically been my home for nearly my entire life. You see, being a ranger isn't just a job, it's a calling. My dad was a ranger, and his stories of the park and its secrets were my bedtime tales. After he passed when I was young, I stepped into his boots, literally. I wore his old, worn-out hat and jacket my first day on the job. One autumn day, I was out on a routine check near the Lamar Valley after a storm had passed. There was a report of an injured bison, a young male, spotted by some hikers. I set out alone. That's typical for us rangers, though we always let someone know where we're headed. The sky was a dull gray, and a soft drizzle fell, making the ground soft beneath my boots. I reached the last known location of the bison, but found nothing. No tracks, no sign of struggle, no blood. Now, it's not uncommon for injured animals to move, but an injured bison, they're more likely to stay put. I decided to move deeper into the woods. After about an hour, I saw something. Not the bison, but a clearing up ahead that I never noticed before. I've patrolled this area countless times, but this area had somehow kept itself off of my radar. I stepped into the clearing. The air felt colder here. The drizzle turned to a fine mist that seemed to just hover in the air, rather than fall. The trees around the edge looked strange. They were white, as if bleached by the sun, their branches empty too. No leaves at all, which was strange this time of year. That's when I heard it, a low, ragged sound. Not a growl, not a call, something in between. It was ahead of me, beyond the mist. I should have turned back, but for me, curiosity isn't a trait. It's a curse. I moved forward slowly, my hands trembling slightly. The sound grew louder, more distinct. I could hear a movement, a heavy, labored dragging sound. I thought of the bison. Maybe it was him, hurt and needing help. I picked up my pace, heart pounding, and there it was. In the middle of the clearing, a figure, tall, with its skin stretched tight over protruding bones. Its head was a skull, antlered, with empty eye sockets that seemed to follow me. I stopped dead in my tracks. It wasn't a bison. It was something else. Something I've heard about in hushed whispers around campfires. A Wendigo is what they referred to it as. A creature of legend. It turned its head, and we locked eyes. Or, more like, where its eyes should have been. The world around us was silent in that moment. I felt an urge to run, to scream, but my body wouldn't comply. Eventually, it moved, and it wasn't moving toward me, but sideways, almost gliding. And with each movement, it seemed to fade and become nearly invisible and just a whisper of itself. I watched as it took off in a direction away from me. But instead of heading back to safety, something inside me stirred, an inexplicable urge to follow, to find out why. After years in these woods, this creature decided to reveal itself to me. My rational mind screamed to turn around, to report back about the bison, to forget what I saw, but my legs moved of their own accord. I followed the path the creature had taken, each step feeling heavier than the last. As I walked, the woods around me started to change. The trees seemed taller, the mist thickened, feeling like a cold, wet blanket. I should have been scared, but I wasn't. It was more like I was moving through a dream, my body on autopilot, my mind floating somewhere above, watching it all take place. I don't know how long I walked, but eventually the mist began to clear, and I found myself at the edge of a ravine. It was deep and the walls were steep, but down at the bottom, I could see a cave entrance. The Wendigo, or at least the last shimmering image of it, had headed in that direction. Taking a deep breath, I began to descend. The way down was treacherous, loose rocks and wet earth threatening to send me tumbling with every step. But I made it to the bottom, my hands and knees smeared with mud. The cave mouth loomed out from the face of the earth. There was a smell in the air here that was old and earthy, like damp leaves and rotting wood. I pulled out my flashlight and clicked it on. The light seemed feeble in the overwhelming darkness, but it was enough. I stepped inside. The air was cooler here, and I could hear the sound of water dripping somewhere further inside. The walls near the opening were covered in moss. That's when I heard it again, the low, ragged sound from before. It echoed off the cave walls, making it impossible to tell where it was coming from. I followed it deeper into the cave, the beam of my flashlight cutting through the darkness like a knife. The cave narrowed and I had to stoop to continue. The sound grew louder, more insistent. And then, the cave opened up into a larger chamber, and there it was. The Wendigo stood at the far end of the room, its back to me. It was motionless and looked like a statue carved from bone and sinew. I approached with my heart thudding so loudly, I was sure it could hear it, but it didn't move. I stopped just a few feet from it, close enough to see how odd and oddly mesmerizing it looked. Its skin was all stretched over bones that jutted out. Even though it was kind of scary, I couldn't help but be a little amazed. There was something about it that was hard to look away from. It was there, this thing from all the campfire stories, just standing still. It was overwhelmingly obvious that this creature belonged here, belonged in this park probably more than any human ever would. Then it just backed away and sort of just became part of the cave. And just like that, it was gone. I didn't chase after it or anything like that. It felt like that would have been wrong somehow. I walked out of there with a weird mix of feelings, not sure if I was scared, sad, or just plain bewildered. All I knew was that I'd keep this to myself. Telling people wouldn't do any good, and I knew I'd never be able to come up with the words to adequately describe it. Let's just say I sort of feel reborn when I'm in the park now. I'm seeing everything through a new lens, and with lots of new understanding. Alright, so here's how this went down. I've been working in corporate jobs for a good chunk of my life. Tech industry. Lots of screens, loads of emails, never-ending pings on my phone. My name's Sam, by the way. I got to a point where I couldn't tell if I was blinking or if it was just the screen refreshing. So, I decided to cash in those vacation days that were piling up. I needed to head out and do something different, something real for a change. I picked a sea cruise for no other reason than I wanted to see far into the distance for once, not just another cubicle wall. So, I got online and found the perfect week-long cruise along the coast of Scandinavia. Yep. I went that far away, which felt great. I had visions of being like a Viking in the Nordic Sea, hundreds of years before computers. So, I flew into Oslo, spent the night in a hotel, and the next day boarded the boat. The boat was nice, nothing too fancy, but it had that old-world charm to it. It was one of those smaller vessels that promised a personal experience with the sea, whatever that meant. Now, I'm not much of a socializer. I mean, I can hold a conversation, but I'd rather not, you know? So most times I found myself leaning on the railing, just watching the waves. I was 4 days into this cruise, and that was my routine. Wake up, coffee, stare at the ocean, maybe read a bit, dinner, bed, rinse and repeat. Of course, there was also the daily trip off the boat for sightseeing. But this one night, I couldn't sleep. We were somewhere off the coast of Norway. And the sky was just this endless canvas of stars. I figured I'd get some air. I walked up to my usual spot, and that's when things got weird. The sea was unusually calm, like glass. It's eerie when it's that still, and you're the only one out there. So I'm looking out at the sea's surface, and suddenly, there was this movement in the water. But it was so subtle. I almost convinced myself it was my eyes playing tricks on me. But then, it happened again, closer to the boat this time. It was like a shadow, massive and fluid, bulging the water up. You have to understand, seeing something that doesn't make sense in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the night, is completely confusing. Your brain just doesn't accept it at first, because you're out of your element and don't know what's normal and what isn't. I kept watching, trying to make sense of it. This shadow, it started to take a form. I could make out parts of it breaking the surface, long and sleek, not a whale or anything I could identify. Then it rose higher, part of it did anyway, It was like a cross between a snake and, I don't know, something prehistoric. I was alone out there. The only sound was the low hum of the boat's engines. No one else out there to validate what I was seeing. This thing, it had these, I guess you'd call them spines or ridges along its back, catching the moonlight as it moved silently alongside the ship. It wasn't aggressive or anything. It didn't seem to notice the boat or me for that matter. It was just there. I watched it for a good while. At least I think it was a while. Time felt funny, stretched out and condensed all at once. The thing about the ocean is that it's full of mysteries, right? We know more about the surface of the moon than we do about the deep sea. That's what I was thinking when this creature, this sea monster, slid back into the depths as quietly as it had appeared. I stood there for a long time after it disappeared. My hands were gripping the railing so tight, my knuckles were white. You ever have one of those moments where your body reacts before your mind catches up? That was me. My heart was racing, but my thoughts were just a jumbled mess. I tried to rationalize it. Maybe it was a bunch of sea debris tangled together, looking like something else. Deep down, though, I knew it wasn't that. I've seen logs, seaweed, all sorts of junk floating around, and that is not what this was. This thing moved with purpose. Eventually, I realized I was freezing. It must have been the shock, or maybe it was just the night air. I didn't really feel it until then. I rubbed my arms trying to bring some feeling back into them, and that's when I decided to head back inside. I took one last look at the sea, half expecting the thing to reemerge and confirm I wasn't losing my mind, but the water was still again, like nothing had happened. Back in my cabin, I couldn't just go to bed. I turned on the lamp and sat there at this little desk they had in the room. There was a pad of paper and a pen, probably meant for writing postcards or something. I started to write down what I saw, every detail before it slipped away from my mind. The curve of its back, the size compared to the boat, how it didn't make a sound. I wasn't planning on showing it to anyone. It was just for me, to make it real somehow. Then I got up and paced around. The room felt too small all of a sudden. I thought about waking someone up, telling the crew, but what would I say? Hey, I just saw something impossible. Care to take a look? They'd think I was drunk or dreaming. Plus, I couldn't shake the feeling that whatever that thing was, it wasn't a danger. It felt like a secret. Something shared just with me. I ended up at the window, just staring out at the darkness. I watched the way the moonlight played on the water, creating a path that seemed to lead somewhere far away from everything. It was beautiful and unsettling all at once. I don't know when I finally fell asleep, but I remember jumping at every little sound the ship made. Every creak and groan sounded like it was that creature coming back. But each time I looked out, nothing was there. The next morning, everything was normal. Too normal. The sun was up, people were having breakfast, talking, laughing. The sea was just the sea. I almost convinced myself it was a dream, but the writing on that pad of paper was too detailed, too desperate to be anything but real. And that's how my ordinary cruise became something else entirely. I kept to myself even more so after that. I'd still stand at the railing, looking out at the water, wondering about what was living beneath the surface, about how much is out there we don't understand. I guess I got what I wanted, something real, something beyond my little world of cubicles. But it's one thing to wish for adventure. It's another to meet the unknown face to face. And I'm still not sure what to make of it all. So I work at this little library in my hometown, right? Small place, you blink and you'd miss it driving by. It's in Ohio, where not much happens except the occasional high school football win that gets everyone talking. I'm the librarian there, but I also teach this class at the local college about folklore. You know, stories about strange things and ideas that have been passed down for generations, like legends that grandparents swear are true. Well, this one night after class, I'm driving home and it's super dark out. The kind of dark where you can't see 2 feet in front of you, so I'm going real slow. I like taking the back roads because they're quiet, and I can drive at my own pace with no one on my tail. I just sort of unwind from the day like that. There's this stretch of road with woods on both sides where it feels like you're driving through a tunnel made of trees. It's kind of creepy, but in a cool way. I'm listening to some music on low, nothing special, just background noise. Suddenly, I see something up ahead. At first, I'm squinting, thinking my eyes are playing tricks on me. There's this thing. It's hard to make out, but it's right where the trees stop and the road starts. Tall and kind of human-shaped, but all wrong. It's dark, and at a glance, you'd think it's a big guy in a coat. But then I see it's not a coat. It looks more like fur or feathers. Something wild. My first thought is it's an animal, but then it looks at me. I mean, really looks at me. Its eyes catch my headlights and they're shining like bike reflectors. I'm telling myself, drive, just hit the gas, but I don't. I'm there, foot hovering over the pedal, staring at this thing. I'm trying to figure out what I'm looking at. It's too big to be anything I should recognize, and I've seen them all out here. For a second, I think, is someone messing with me? Like one of my students? But deep down, I know it's no prank. This thing has an air about it, like it doesn't belong here, like it stepped out of one of those stories I tell. Then, the thing starts moving, but not walking. It kind of shimmies as if it's not totally at ease having to walk. And then, on the other side of the road, it disappears into the woods. I'm not usually the type to chase after things that don't make sense. I mean, I organize books for a living. For me, everything has its place. But this? This was a puzzle without a box, and I couldn't let it go. I've read enough to know that you're supposed to stay in your car, that going into the woods at night after a creature is chapter one of every horror story. But this was my chapter, and I guess curiosity really can override common sense. So, I kill the engine and grab my flashlight from the glove box. My heart isn't exactly racing. It's more like it's doing a steady jog. I figure this thing that I've determined a Mothman, if that's what it was, didn't seem aggressive. It just stood there, then slid away, like it wanted to be followed. I head into the woods, trying to be as quiet as I can. The underbrush is thick, catching at my jeans, and I'm not exactly dressed for a trek. The light from my flashlight is bouncing around, making shadows that look like other people are around. I keep going, looking for any sign of the creature. After about 10 minutes, I'm thinking I should have marked my path. I've read about people getting turned around in the woods, and now I'm getting why. Everything looks the same, and the silence is getting to me. That's when I hear it, a sort of low whistling sound. I follow it, pushing through the last line of trees, and I come out into this clearing. The moon's directly above, and it's bright enough that I flick off my flashlight. And there it is on the far side of the clearing. The Mothman, or whatever it is really tall, and even from a distance, I can see the eyes. They're not reflecting light anymore. They're just this deep red, like coals in a fire. It's got wings. I can see them now, draped behind it like some kind of tattered cloak. It's not moving, just standing there like it's waiting. For a moment, I'm frozen, not with fear, but with this overwhelming sense of awe. It's like seeing a comet or a solar eclipse, something you only get once if you're lucky. Then it tilts its head, and I swear it feels like it's acknowledging me, like it knew I'd follow. I don't feel threatened, which is the weirdest part. If anything, I feel like I'm supposed to see this, like it's a part of the folklore I've been teaching but never truly believed. I take a step forward, and the Mothman spreads its wings. They're huge, spanning wider than its height. I stop, not wanting to scare it, but that seems like a funny thought now. Can you scare something like this? We stand there, me on one side of the clearing and it on the other, neither of us moving, just looking across at each other. Then, in a rush of wind that sends leaves flying, it lifts into the air. It doesn't flap its wings like a bird. It's more graceful, like it's part of the wind itself. I watch it go, feeling like I've just been a part of something impossible. I stay there until the sound of its departure fades, and the forest is silent again. I retreat and eventually find my way back to my car. I know this story is one for the books, my own private folklore, but I wonder if I would believe it if someone came into the library and told me the same tale. When I get back to my car, I sit for a while, not starting it up, just sitting and thinking. I didn't get anything to bring back but my word, and in my line of work, words are both everything and not quite enough. But the memory, that's mine to keep, and maybe that's enough to make me believe there's more to the stories I've been telling all these years. I always had a thing for those spots where you can just sit and let the world go by. Being someone who writes and travels, I've got to see a lot of places, temporary stops that feel like home for a bit while I stay there to write. This time around, I landed at the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel in Canada. It's a pretty impressive place, but the real find is this little library they've got hidden away from all the noise. It was one of those cold winter nights when it gets dark early, and there's this quiet that just settles in. The place was stacked with books, and they had this old smell that mixed right in with the scent of burning wood from the fireplace. Kind of perfect for someone who likes to get lost in a good book, which is exactly what I was doing. The lamp with its stained glass shade threw this nice warm light all over the place. As it got later, the wind outside started howling against the stone of the building, and that quiet inside the library felt even deeper. The shadows danced on the walls thanks to the fire, and it was pretty calming. But then, something changed. There was this draft that came out of nowhere and messed with the pages of my book. I checked, and all the windows and doors were shut tight. Despite the fire going strong, I got cold. The fire did this little stutter, throwing shadows that looked off. And that smell, something new and old at the same time, like a forgotten memory. Couldn't put my finger on it, but it felt oddly personal. I tried to shake it off, telling myself it was all in my head and that I should just focus on my book. The peace in the library was gone, though, swapped out for this heavy silence. I tried to get back into the book, to forget about the weird vibes in the room, but the more I read, the harder it got. The silence was too loud, and the pages seemed to make more noise than they should. I was getting nervous, and it was getting harder to focus. There was this sense that someone was keeping an eye on me from a corner I couldn't see. It felt like the room was getting colder by the second, a real drop from the cozy heat I was enjoying before. Then, out of nowhere, I saw something from the corner of my eye, a shape, a quick glimpse of something. But when I tried to get a proper look, there was nothing there. Could it be the bride some folks say walks these halls? But that was just the start of the night. Just as I was trying to dive back into my book, something moved. Down the big staircase that leads up to the library, there was this shaky figure coming up, slow and almost not there. The rustling sound was distinct, a sort of whispering that filled the room. There was no mistaking the shape of the figure making her way down the stairs. I gasped audibly as I realized that the ghostly bride was more than just a story. She moved with a kind of elegance that didn't belong in the world of the living. It was hard to take a breath, to even think about moving away. Her presence was overwhelming. The sorrow that seemed to hang around her, it was almost tangible. With each step she took, the atmosphere in the room grew heavier. She was wrapped in lace so delicate. It looked like it was made from the fog that rolls over the mountains early in the morning. Even in the dim light, there was a beauty about her that was hard to put into words. Her face held an expression that spoke of loss and longing, and her eyes, they had the depth of someone who'd seen too much. As she reached the end of the staircase, she paused. It was like she was listening for something, maybe a voice from the past, maybe the echo of a laughter that had long since faded. Then, in the blink of an eye, she was gone. It was as if she'd never been there at all, except for the silence she left behind, which seemed to scream in the quiet of the library. My heart was racing, my mind a whirlwind of questions. Had I actually just seen her? The bride that people whispered about. The one whose tragic story was etched into the very walls of this hotel. I couldn't just sit there. I had to know more. So, I started looking into her story. The ghostly bride. I started by asking the staff, and the more I learned, the more the chills ran down my spine. Her story was a sad one. Her life cut short on what should have been one of the happiest days of her life. They said she fell down the staircase on her wedding day, and now she walked those steps over and over again. The staff spoke in low voices about her, some with a twinge of fear, others with a hint of sadness. Guests sometimes saw her too, always on the staircase, just like I did. That night in the library, I was an actual witness to one of the hotel's oldest and most enduring tales. It was a real-life encounter with a legend, a moment that joined the countless other stories that people would tell about the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel. From then on, I was part of that history too. It's a story that I've carried with me, one that I share when people ask if I've ever seen a ghost. It's a tale of a bride and a ghost, of sadness and beauty, all wrapped up in the quiet corners of a library. I know this isn't a crazy, scary, or super weird story, but I really wanted to share it with you, and I hope you find it interesting enough to share it with all the others who listen to you. Thank you. It was about 3 years ago when I first moved to Chicago. I got this small apartment, a little nook of a place right at the edge of Lincoln Park, which is just north of downtown. I moved here for a job, a tech startup that promised the world, and delivered an office with only a view of the alley. Classic, right? I didn't know a soul in the city, and let me tell you, that first winter was brutal. I'm talking bone-chilling winds that had cut through any coat. Kind of brutal. It was around then that I picked up jogging. I know that sounds weird in the winter, but I was going stir crazy. It wasn't anything serious at first, just a way to keep the blood flowing, you know. But as spring rolled around and the ice thawed, I found myself drawn to those morning runs more and more. It was my slice of routine. My job was a grind. Wake up, code, meetings, maybe a desk lunch if I was lucky. Then more coding, then the occasional beer with colleagues who were more stressed than friendly. Rinse and repeat. Alright, let me take you back to that morning last spring. I remember stepping out the door, just as the city started stirring awake. Lincoln Park had this vibe in the early hours. Funky and a bit gritty, if you ask me. The paths in the park were clear, the greenery was like a postcard, and the flowers were doing this little morning dance. The Chicago skyline was like a backdrop from a movie set, too, standing there in the distance. It's this mix of concrete and nature that just gets you. That morning was crisp, the kind of chill that wakes you right up, with my heartbeat keeping time like a drum. The park was my kind of quiet, just the sound of my running shoes hitting the path and the odd car in the far-off distance. I lost myself in the run, letting the park sounds and smells kind of wash over me. It's like each step was shaking off the weight of yesterday. I had this trail I always took. And that day, the mist was like a blanket over the world, making everything sharper somehow. The flowers smelled like they were right there with you. And the earth, it had that rain-on-dirt smell that's like nature's own brand of new car smell. You could see the dew sparkling on the leaves, like the park was showing off just for me. But that peace, it was like the calm before the storm. I had no idea that things were about to get wild. So, there I was, taking a breather, when I kept on down the path that slices right through the park's heart. The sounds of the city were like background music, barely there, and even though I was heating up from the run, I got this sudden shiver. That's when it hit me, the feeling of eyes on me. Have you ever felt that? It's like your whole body's trying to tell you something. The back of my neck went all prickly, and the world went mute for a sec, like everything paused. And let me tell you, that unease turned into a full-on alert real quick. Something up ahead caught my attention. Something wasn't right. It was like a piece of the picture that didn't fit. That day, as I was huffing it over a small bridge in the park, that's when I saw it. There was this huge shape just perched on the metal guardrails. It stood out against the sky that was just starting to lighten up. A big, dark figure that made me stop dead in my tracks. Now, I like to think of myself as the kind of guy who keeps his head on straight. So my first thought, it had to be a person. Maybe some daredevil trying to get a killer shot of the sunrise or something. But man, my gut was tying itself in knots. There was this cold wave of dread that just washed over me, and it wouldn't let go. As the dawn got clearer, my eyes started to make sense of what they were seeing. And that's when my brain started ringing alarm bells. This thing, whatever it was, it wasn't human. It was all kinds of wrong. a freak show special. It was tall, too tall, and it moved weird, like it was more of a shadow than anything real. And the wings, they were like something out of a nightmare, huge and black and just plain wrong. Like they didn't belong in my city park. Not here, not anywhere. Those wings, they looked like they were stuck onto its back, some twisted joke of nature. And when it looked at me, I nearly lost it. The eyes were red, not like some reflection or trick of the light, but glowing, angry red. I was stuck, man. My heart was drumming so loud, I was sure it could hear it, but my feet were like lead. Everything went silent, and it was just me and this thing, staring each other down. But then, as fast as it showed up, it was gone. It just spread those massive wings and took to the sky. All that was left was the bridge, looking as normal as ever, and me, trying to figure out if I was losing my mind. The rest of the run is a blur. I remember just needing to get out, to put distance between me and that bridge. I ran like the hounds of hell were on my heels, the only sounds my thudding heart and my feet slapping the path. Ever since then, I've been trying to wrap my head around it. Was it just my imagination running wild? Some joker in a costume trying to get a rise out of early morning joggers? Or the thought that really gets me, was it something real? Something that isn't supposed to exist in our world? I can't shake the memory or the fear that comes with it, that peaceful feeling I used to have on my runs. It's been replaced by a constant lookout over my shoulder. And when I think about the local stories, the legends of the Mothman, I can't help but see the connections. No matter how out there it sounds, that's my truth. Those red eyes, they're burned into my brain, a permanent part of my Linkin Park mornings. It's something I can't unsee, something that's changed the way I look at those paths I used to love.